I invite you to dive deeper into conversations from this podcast. Join our community on Slack. Here, you can connect with fellow listeners, share your thoughts on episodes, and engage in meaningful discussions. Plus, you can submit your questions in written or audio form to be answered on the podcast. Together, let's build a supportive space and shape the future of the show. Join us at lesbehonest.show/Slack. See you on the inside. Welcome to the Lesbe Honest podcast. I'm your host, Sarah St. John. And my guest today is a book coach and author with a mission to amplify LGBTQ plus voices and bring more of their real life stories into the world. Welcome to the show, Suzette Mullen.
Hi, thanks for having me, Sarah.
It's so good to have you on. Can you give us a little bit more of your background? I know I just briefly touched on it, but...
Yeah, absolutely. So I am someone who came out later in life, and I wrote a whole book about it. I just happened to have it, just my favorite prop. I just happened to have it here. The Only Way Through is out. I came out in my mid-50s, and I wrote about that journey in my memoir, which was just published this year by the University of Wisconsin Press. And also professionally, I'm a book coach, as you mentioned. I happen to focus on working with memoir writers and nonfiction writers, and particularly writers in the LGBTQ plus community. So I have a group mentorship program where it's been pretty amazing. It's called Write Yourself Out, where writers come together and get feedback, but they also build community at the same time. I pretty much have completely changed my life personally and professionally in this probably third, I don't know if it's my last chapter. I hope I have a lot more life left. We tend to talk about your second chapter or your next chapter. This is a chapter where I feel like I'm finally fully alive, both personally and professionally, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. What got you into being a book coach and all of that? How did that start?
In a former life, I was a lawyer. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was a community volunteer. I was a social justice advocate. When you get to be my age, you often have many different professional lives. But all along the way, I always was writing. And I was always editing. It's just something that I was good at and I enjoyed doing. It was very intuitive to me. When my nest was empty, I have two now young adult sons. When my youngest son went off to college, I made the decision that I really wanted to put a stake in the ground professionally and really take my next chapter seriously professionally. And I was going to be a writer. I was going to claim that identity as a writer and also help other writers write their stories. And at the time, I wouldn't have called myself a book coach. I don't think I really even knew that term. But when I started working on my own memoir, I did find a book coach. I hired a book coach to help me with my process. And that's when I became familiar with that. It's a fairly new profession, really. And I saw how helpful it was to have someone guiding me along the way. And I thought, you know what? I think I could do this too. And I think I'd be pretty darn good at it. So I took a training course and became certified as a book coach. And I've been doing it full time now for about 4 years.
And you mainly, it's helping you coach people who are in the LGBTQ space to share their stories.
Yeah. So I do work with straight people too, but I know because I keep getting these inquiries on my website. I'm like, do you work with straight people too? Yes, I do. But I've really kind of focused most of my energy now on working with writers in the LGBTQ plus community. Now, they don't need to be writing about their coming out journeys. I mean, some of them are, absolutely. But the common denominator is they identify as queer in some way. They are writing something that is true. They're writing a true story, whether it's a memoir or maybe they're writing in the nonfiction space. So like more of a self-help book or a business book, something that is nonfiction. And then the other qualification I have is I don't work with assholes. Every writer I work with, whether I work with them one-on-one or they're inside my mentorship program, I always have a call with them first. I mean, nobody can just sign up and buy a package. That's especially important in the mentorship program because part of what I'm providing and trying to cultivate is a safe space for writers to be vulnerable and explore and be free of judgment. That's the work that I do.
Do you have like a form or an application that people fill out? And it's like, one of the questions is, are you an asshole?
I do have a form, and I haven't added that question, but maybe I need to. I do feel like I can pretty much tell. I can tell between our email exchanges, there are assholes out there and there are trolls out there. And part of what I have to do with the business owner and also as someone who's trying to provide a safe space for LGBTQ plus writers is to do the best I can do to screen those people out.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your coming out story? I mean, obviously it's in your book
and everybody
should get it. But yeah, because I read that you were in love with your best friend for a couple of decades.
Let's just say I was a little bit of a late bloomer, a little bit slow on the uptake. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, obviously I tell this in great detail in my book, but I'm happy to share the high level story with your listeners. So I grew up thinking I was straight, grew up in a very conventional family, two parents that were public school teachers. And I grew up in the 60s and 70s, went to high school in the 70s and married a man, had two kids. And at the same time, I began this very intense friendship with a female friend who happened to be my older son's kindergarten teacher. And it was a friendship I didn't understand. It was a friendship unlike any I've ever had before. When I was in my early 50s, I was working on another memoir, a memoir about my professional journey. And my fingers led me to a different story, which was this story about this friend. And I started seeing that friendship in a different light. I started understanding that I didn't just love this friend, but that I had been in love with this friend, and I still was. And that was, frankly, a terrifying revelation. I was married. I considered myself to have a good marriage. I had a very nice life. I had, you know, material comforts and security and all the things. And that revelation set in motion the story that I tell in The Only Way Through Is Out. And it set in motion, it's like a domino effect. Okay, what is really true about this friendship? Was this all in my head? What does this really mean? And then coming to terms with what was true, although I had not had any kind of physical or sexual experience with this friend. And then coming to terms with what was true for me as far as my sexual identity. And then really, what, if anything, was I going to do about it? And that's the journey. It was the most difficult thing I've experienced in my life to date. I think when you think that when you've lived your life a certain way, for me, it was over 50 years, and then you start seeing yourself in a completely different light, it calls into question pretty much everything. The ultimate choice I had to make was, do I stay in this safe, comfortable life that I have been living in, or do I risk everything for a life that I've really only been living in my head?
So did you end up telling your friend?
Well, you're going to have to read the book, Sarah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't want full details.
Yeah, you're going to have to read the book, Sarah. But, well, It's in my
Amazon. It's in my cart, and I was thinking about ordering it before this interview, but I was like, well, I'm not going to probably be able to finish it.
Yeah.
So, but now I'm definitely intrigued to hear.
Yes. What happened? So let's just say there's quite a bit about what unfolds with this friend, and it's definitely part of the journey. The hardest person to come out to was myself.
Hmm.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, that was the hardest person to come out to. And then there was a whole host of other people that were really difficult to come out to, including my mother, including my sister, including my husband and my kids. And that is, I don't know a whole lot about your story, Sarah, but I know that I have been in community with a lot of women who are questioning and coming out later in life. And this is part of the journey, right? We have these established lives that when we are contemplating coming out or do decide to come out, it doesn't just impact us, right? It impacts a whole ecosystem of relationships that we have built over years. And that was part of the struggle for me, was what was true for me, but then what was the right thing to do? Because it wasn't just about me.
So can you kind of tell us a little bit about your coming out process? And I mean, I'm out to all my friends and stuff, just not the family yet. That's kind of the last remaining piece. And so what kind of things did you learn in the process? How do you know when to come out to certain people?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So for me, it was all entangled with my marriage, right? Because it was either stay in the marriage, which there was a period of time that that was something I was trying to do. And my then husband also wanted to do. I mean, he was like, I don't care if you're gay. He's a lovely man. I often talk about him in the past tense. He's very much alive. He was and is a lovely man and really was very generous and grace-filled through all of this, although it was obviously a very painful time for him and for both of us. We, you know, we tried to see if there was a way that we could live with this reality in our marriage and ultimately came to the conclusion that there wasn't. So until that decision was made, I pretty much was keeping the coming out under wraps because my thought was, if I'm going to stay married to my husband, I don't really need to be broadcasting, you know, to the world that I'm gay or I'm a lesbian, because his understanding and frankly, you know, our understanding of our marriage was that there wasn't room for, it wasn't going to be an open marriage. There wasn't going to be any room for exploration. So it was either stay in the closet and stay in the marriage and make the most of the life that I had or blow everything up. I do detail this in the book. What I would say is sort of a general, not rule, that's not the right word, but what happened for me and was that when the pain of lying, which it felt like lying to the world about who I was, about what was going on inside me, when that pain just became unbearable, that really was the time that everything changed. When I decided, yeah, I'm not willing to go to my grave without knowing who I fully am. I mean, that was really, there was a moment where that became clear to me. And that's really what set in motion sharing my truth with various people. And so there were some breadcrumbs I was dropping along the way with various people, but the real coming out publicly first to my husband kind of knew what was happening for quite a while. But then once I told my kids, that was kind of like, that was the point of no return for me. Once my kids know, there's no turning back. And then I needed to tell the other people because it wasn't fair to them. I felt for them to have to keep a secret, right? So then the mother got told. And then as soon as we made the decision that we were getting divorced, we started sharing that we were getting divorced with people. And I made the decision that I would share with a select group of people why we were getting divorced, because we were the kind of couple that no one would have ever imagined would have gotten divorced. And I wanted to be the one to tell the story. I didn't want other people to tell the story or the narrative to get away from me. So I started sharing it. And then at the end of the book, which I'm not going to give the ending away, but the end of the book, there's a bit more of a public coming out. And so I think that it sounds like even for you, and I think this is true for a lot of people, coming out is not a one and done thing.
Not every day, but
And
everybody you meet, it's a new.
Right. And it's making that decision about who needs to know. Is it important to know? Is it safe to share this? All of those decisions that we need to make that people who are heterosexual don't need to be making. I mean, where I live now, I've always been in this new place. So it's been a little easier because the people that I've gotten to be friendly with here only know me one way, although I still encounter people every day and I'm not typically wrapping myself in a rainbow flag, although I have now been known to do that on occasion, but I don't have, I'm a lesbian written across my forehead. There still are times when I'm hesitating about, am I going to say my wife? I'm now married to a woman, or am I going to not say that? All of those things that we have to think about.
Yeah. And when you say wrapping yourself in a pride flag, literally on your website, there's two or three pictures where you're wrapped in the flag.
And that was kind of funny because when I was first coming out to those first group of friends, we had made the decision that we were getting divorced. And I sent them an email. And I was really, at that stage, I was still very uncomfortable with labels and language. And I didn't say I'm gay or I'm a lesbian or I'm queer. I think the term I used was I've come to understand my sexuality differently. That was the language I was comfortable with. And I also said, you know, I'm not ready to wrap myself in a rainbow flag yet. And so when I was finally ready to do that, and I was having some branding photos done, I was like, we have to have some pictures with me with the rainbow flag, the pride flag wrapped around me. So, yeah.
Yeah. So when you were coming out to different people, what was the most difficult in terms of someone's reaction to it, or the most negative?
I have a chapter in the book called The Ledger. And what I did in that chapter was I realized that going forward in my life, I was going to have people on one side of a ledger, one side of a line and the other side of the line, people that were going to joyfully come along with me in this journey. And then people who were either not going to come with me or were going to be kind of at best, quote unquote, accepting or tolerating, but they weren't going to fully embrace me as I was. And that was a new experience because, again, I had lived this life of heterosexual privilege, which I didn't even realize I had that privilege when I was living it, right? And what I would say is that, so just for a little context for your listeners, I did not come out. I know a lot of LGBTQ plus people and a lot of the writers I work with are coming out of very conservative families or Christian fundamentalism and evangelicalism. And that was not my context. I grew up in New York and in a pretty progressive circle of people. My family was not LGBTQ plus. Politics weren't something that we talked about because we didn't think anybody was gay. But I didn't come out of a really non-affirming background. However, there still were a few people who were less than, I'm so happy for you. And I talk about a few of them in the book. I'll mention one in particular, which does speak to that Christian focus. In those days, I did identify as a Christian, although I was in a much more like progressive branch of Christianity. So I had one friend who I had come out to, and she texted me one night and just said, you know, really long text and just was like, Basically, I want to make sure that you've really thought this through. And she said, I want to make sure that you're not just succumbing to the temptations of the flesh. And I was just like, oh, wow. Okay, here we go. And I mean, you know, she was trying to couch it very politely. But let's just say I didn't take it very politely. I just let her know how it made me feel. And I just basically said, I did not have room for people like that in my life. So all in all, I did not experience a lot of the backlash that a lot of people in the LGBTQ community face for coming out. For me, it was generally the negative reactions were less about me coming out as queer. It was more about how could you leave this great life you have? You're nuts. There's a scene with my mother where she basically is saying, it's too late. It's too late for you. She's like, if you were younger, I wouldn't mind, kind of thing. And so that really is one of the messages of my book, is that I hope my story inspires people that are at midlife and beyond who might be wondering, is it too late for them? My belief and my story is that it's never too late.
That's a good point. And when you mentioned earlier about when the pain of not coming out is greater probably than the fear of coming out, it kind of reminds me. So Emily Better, who did an interview with you, that's how I was introduced to you and all that stuff. She's doing this thing right now where she works one-on-one with people about mind shift. And so I was kind of a guinea pig. And the problem that I picked was the fact that I'm afraid to come out to family. And so she kind of, we talked through it, or she asked different, a series of questions. But anyway, ultimately, what I concluded was I can't control how they're going to react. But ultimately, the peace and the freedom that I will feel after having released that burden off my shoulders, focus on that. And that'll be greater ultimately than whatever negative.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually that's another really core part of the message and story. The story I'm telling is that there is a cost to authenticity. In our context, it's being authentic means coming out as queer people. And there is a cost. There's a cost to potentially losing relationships of people that you care about, family members, friends. There's a cost of walking in the world as a queer person versus a straight person. I mean, we don't need to go into all of that, but let's just say that I think that's it. No matter what you feel politically, I don't think there's any doubt that it is more difficult and riskier to walk in the world as a queer person. And so there is a cost for sure. And there is the joy on the other side. And that's the part that I think until you're there on that other side, or you see when you're on this side, you haven't made the leap yet, but you can see other people who have made the leap, and you can see that joy or that freedom or that peace of just living at ease in your own skin. That's what's possible on the other side. I mean, that's what I was hoping would be on the other side, of course. And until you actually make the leap, you can't experience it. And so that's really, I mean, that is sort of the central message, that to hold those two things together. Yes, there's a cost and there's the joy. And in my view, the joy outweighs the cost. I feel like I've been very fortunate in life. I had a nice life, and yet something was missing, and I didn't feel like I was living fully. I wasn't feeling fully alive. And that's how I start the book. I'm reflecting on friends of mine who seem to be stepping fully into their lives. They're glowing. I can see this glow on their face, and I don't have that. And I know I want that, and I don't know how I'm going to get there. And so it's really the journey of how I found a way to glow at the end. Absolutely what you said, there is a cost and there is the joy. And I mean, I think that's what life's about, right? I mean, we don't get to experience the fullness of life without both of those things.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and until you do it, you can't really know. You can assume all day, but maybe people will surprise you. You never know. But ultimately, I think the freedom, and I'm gradually getting there, but the freedom I think that I'll experience in the peace and not feeling like I'm keeping a secret or living a lie or whatever, that kind of like that tightness in your chest and the anxiety and all that.
That's the crossroads that I think we all face at different times in our lives, whether it's about coming out or some other big decision. Right now, I won't give any details away, but my younger son has been offered a new job. And if he says yes, and I'm waiting on pins and needles to see what his decision will be, but if he says yes, it'll be a huge change in his life. You know, I mean, moving to a different city and a whole other level of responsibility and all these things. But it's all this, I mean, the possibilities and the opportunity looks amazing. But until you make that leap and you're on the other side, you don't know, right? And you know what your life is like. Like, he knows what his life is like right now. And it's pretty darn good. It's not like he's in a job he hates or any of those things. So we all, I think, face those crossroads of, do I stay in the thing I know, or do I go for this life that is calling me in some way. And I know at some level it's where I need to go and where I want to go, but it's scary as hell. I mean, it's scary as hell. And I wanted to just say one more thing. I'm actually working on a second memoir right now. So the first book, I'll keep holding it up because it's just a great prop. The first book, The Only Way Through Is Out, the story ends in June of 2017. So as we're recording this, it's almost 7 years later. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I've lived a lot of life in 7 years. So the next book is going to cover about a 4-year period. It's tentatively titled After the Leap. So I'm really going to be exploring this whole question of holding joy and holding grief and loss at the same time, because it's not like you make the leap and then everything's just perfect and you just go on. It's life, but it's life that is authentic. It's life that is aligned with who you truly are.
That's awesome. I love that. And when you were talking about crossroads, I think a lot of people listening, they might still be married to a guy and questioning and contemplating divorce and all this stuff. And I feel like that crossroads was a big one for me because I was married for 18 years and got divorced last year. And fortunately, no kids, so that we didn't have to cross that hurdle. But there's just that period of time, though, where you're like, okay, my life is comfortable, especially with, I mean, because there weren't any huge problems that we had, just a bunch of minor ones, but whatever. So on the outside, looking in, other people thought we were probably good. And then to have the dual income and like all this stuff, because basically I went from, because I got married at 21, I went from living with my parents to getting married and then living with him and always having that extra source of income and that companionship and all this stuff.
Sure.
So there was definitely a lot of weighing the pros and the cons and like, is it worth it? How's it going to turn out? But anyway, now almost a year since moving out and filing for divorce, that I'm on the other side of that a year later. I mean, yeah, of course it's still sad and things like that, but I think it was the right decision for both people involved. And so, yeah.
I think the hardest place to be is when you're in that limbo. You've had the realization that you're either gay or you think you may be gay or you're not straight. You're not completely straight. Let's put it that way. I think a lot of us feel at times, or other people feel like they need to put labels on this, but let's just say you've had some kind of revelation or some understanding that you are not completely straight. And you're in a marriage to a man. And whether you have kids or not, you're faced with what next? What do I do? That time of limbo, whether it is you're actively thinking through the options with your husband, which was pretty much the case for me, or you're keeping it all from your husband and you're just bottling this up and you don't have anybody to turn to, or you find a group on Facebook or something, which was, I talk about a group that I found that was a lifeline for me. But that wrestling, that back and forth and that back and forth is such a hard place to be. I mean, just like we were saying before, you don't know what it's going to be like on the other side. And you might have a bunch of voices other than your own telling you not to do it or advising you not to do it. I mean, I had my husband who was generally very gracious under the circumstances. I mean, you know, we had some moments for sure where he was like, you think the grass is greener on the other side. And that was tapping into my deepest fear because I was like, yeah, I do think it's going to be greener on the other side. And what if it's not? What if it's not? And then I've basically effed up my entire life. And so being in that place of limbo, and what I say to women who, if I'm asked, what advice would you give or any of that? Or, you know, I still am somewhat active on some of these Facebook groups because I feel like I want to pay it back, because some of the women that were further along in their journeys helped me so much in my journey. There's no one right timetable. When you're ready, you go. And everyone doesn't make the decision to leave a marriage. I mean, that is not the only choice to make. And there are people that do choose stay in their mixed gender marriage and they find a way to make it work. No judgment. I mean, there's not a one size fits all. The answer, though, is that, yes, you need community and it does help to have people to process things with. But at the end of the day, the only one who can make that decision is you. And learning to tune into your voice and not listen to all the other voices is really the key thing.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I really appreciate your time today. And the best place for people to go to find you, is that the yourstoryfinder.com?
Yeah, so that's my website, yourstoryfinder.com, and you can find all about my book coaching and also my book and all the things about me there. And also, I'm pretty active on Instagram. I don't know if you have show notes, but my handle, I'll actually spell it because somebody took your story finder, which is really annoying. So my handle is the letter U and the letter R, so kind of your story finder. And I love to engage with readers and writers on Instagram. So that's another place to find me.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. And then of course, people can get your book on Amazon.
Everywhere books are sold. I love if people are able to support their independent bookstore and if they have one, that's always fabulous. But I'm pretty agnostic. If you want to use Amazon, go ahead. It certainly is easy. And there's an ebook, a Kindle version of the book. There's the hardback. And then in the summer, there will be an audiobook also.
Okay. Yeah, and I do have show notes, so I'll link to,
perfect,
to that
thank
in
you.
There.
Thank you.
Thanks. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. It was a great time to get to chat with you.
I invite you to dive deeper into conversations from this podcast. Join our community on Slack. Here, you can connect with fellow listeners, share your thoughts on episodes, and engage in meaningful discussions. Plus, you can submit your questions in written or audio form to be answered on the podcast. Together, let's build a supportive space and shape the future of the show. Join us at lesbehonest.show/slack. See you on the inside.